Like a nuclear.
Some crosstalk, I'm up for that.
Blood, you're not alone. Love. Black, like a nuclear bomb we share the same.
Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm SW Conser, and today I'm joined in the studio by one of the guiding talents behind the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival. Nora Coley is a filmmaker and the managing director of POW Film Fest, and she's brought some amazing local talent with her. Nora, great to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
And tell me about the folks that you brought along with you.
I brought two of the filmmakers that are appearing in our shorts program, and I have Marn Lucas here and Aubrey Peebles.
Peebles.
Well, welcome to you all both, Marn and Aubrey. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking about some of the highlights of POW Film Fest in just a few minutes. But first, we have another local filmmaker who has graciously joined us today, an actor and filmmaker. He has a number of events coming up. Jerry Bell Jr., thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So yes, you are an actor as well as a director. Listeners might possibly recognize you from shows such as Grimm, although they might have to see past several layers of makeup.
Right. Yeah, I play different characters. I actually play actual characters that you can recognize me.
Oh, okay. Well, tell us about your documentary, Red, White, and Black.
Right on. Yeah, Red, White, and Black. It's about minority winemakers here in Oregon, and it highlights the challenges and struggles of being a minority and being in the actual film and the film and wine industry. So the documentary features Bertone Foston, who owns a winery out in North Plains, Oregon, Abbey Creek Winery, Remy Drabkin, who owns Remy's Wines down in Dundee, Jesus Guillen, may he rest in peace, he passed away a few years ago. He was a Hispanic winemaker, and Jerry Sleep, who now a winemaker at the Rocco Winery, and Andre Mack, who's a winemaker and sommelier who's traveling around the U.S. right now. But so it highlights these guys and African-American, Hispanic, the LGBTQ community, and any other minority winemakers. We kind of put a little bit of emphasis on them.
Well, this is not the first thing that people probably think of when they think of the wine industry, you know. So how did you first get excited about this project? I mean, what tipped you off to the presence of minority winemakers, of laborers, of people who are rising up through the ranks of the wine industry, who are members of minority communities?
Yeah, my good friend Bertone Foston, and now business partner, reached out to me. He's a winemaker. He's documented as the first black winemaker now in Oregon. He reached out to me. He was interested in sharing his story and some of the challenges of how he's not getting much exposure being a black winemaker here in Oregon. And people come to the door to try the wines, and they think that the winemaker is someone else of a different ethnicity. And once they find out, you know, that the winemaker is black, some people actually have an attitude. There's been times where people have got up and walked away. And so he wanted to share his story. And while we were kind of brainstorming the documentary, I thought it'd be a great idea for us to include all minorities, because I started to hear more challenges in the industry as we were doing the research. So that's how it came about, and the film took off pretty fast. We got a lot of attention off the back, and we were featuring an Oregonian on quite a few radio stations during the development of the project. And we put out a really nice trailer that helped produce it and helped promote it, and the rest is history. It's won a few awards and some film festivals. It's brought some attention to the winemakers, enough attention now to where we're going to do a specific minority winemakers wine tour. The first one of its kind would be this coming Saturday. Well, next Saturday, April 6th. And we're going to take everyone to all the wineries associated with the minority winemakers in the documentary.
Wow. Well, we'll talk about that event in a minute, but I had one other question, and that's, you know, the agricultural industry in the Northwest, it's heavily dependent on Latino laborers, and what if anything are people in the local wine industry doing to make sure that those laborers are recognized, rewarded, you know, that they can come up through the ranks, that they can use their knowledge to bring themselves to a more prominent place in the industry?
That's a good question. I mean, that's why the documentary even came about, because a lot of the minorities aren't being acknowledged, and the growth process doesn't seem to be extreme. Jesus was a rare case, being a Hispanic winemaker, but he worked in the fields. His father works in the fields for years, picking grapes and helping with the winemaking process. But Jesus came in with a passion of really pushing it, and he got lucky. You know, at White Rose Estates, they brought him on, and they made a challenge for him. If you can make a wine that would win an award, then we would feature you as our minority winemaker here at White Rose Estates. But he eventually came out with his own label called the Guillen Family Wines. And so that's what's out there now. And like I said, he passed away about 5 months ago, but his wife's actually still pouring his wines.
And it's, really common also for small wineries, for, winemakers who just have a few acres, to be sending their grapes up to one of the bigger wineries, which means they don't get recognition at all. Necessarily, they get their name on it, but they're really only known in the industry. They're not known by the people who buy and stock and promote and review the wines.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the foundation or the footprint to actually get out and get the full exposure. They don't have the land. And a lot of the wineries that have been extremely successful over the generations, you know, are there because they had, their families inherited land during the Donation Land Act. So most of the winemakers in the red, white, and black do not own their own land because of that, because of the exclusion laws and the push for the white utopia. They didn't want people of color here. So it's really challenging being in the industry, but it's nice to see a lot of progress here in Oregon, where people are really supportive now. And the red, white, and black has helped highlight that and help push towards that progress.
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. Is Oregon's white exclusion laws that go back to the founding of the state, actually before that, when it was a territory. But I do want to ask you, out there filming, were there any moments that were just, I don't want to, for people who want to see the film, I don't want to do any spoilers or anything like that. But were there any moments that were just really surprising, moments that you really just were it was just a really great coincidence that you caught something happening, that you found out something for yourself that surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, when I first took on this project, I didn't know much about wine, and I was pulled into a podcast, and they were asking me questions about wine. It was a wine podcast, and I didn't know anything about wine. I just knew about Boone's Farm. I was being real honest with them. I was like, look, they said, okay, so you're making a documentary about wine, and you don't know anything about it? And I'm like, well, I'm going to learn. I feel like I'm a wine drinking expert now, when it comes to drinking wine, especially Oregon wines. But, and I've learned a lot about the processes. So that's the beauty of being, making a documentary. You learn so much about the subject. And on top of that, when you're director of a wine, film, there's a lot of perks. You get plenty of wine. I got so much wine at home. I actually have my own wine, Director's Crush, which we actually sold out of during the fall season. So there's a lot of benefits to it. A lot of nice surprises.
Maybe at some of the screenings, if you have a screening in the future, you might break out a bottle of that for folks, huh?
Right on. Yeah. So just to give you an update on what's going on, we are currently negotiating distribution with the documentary. We were having events, actual private screenings throughout the year. We circulated through quite a few festivals and won a few awards. Right now, the events are on hold, but soon as we get up and running, we'll be letting the public know, especially when the film goes out through distribution, whether it's video on demand or if it's actually streaming somewhere.
And you have that bus that's going to be going around with, and people can still sign up for this tour of the wineries that you've been visiting with the film crew?
Right on. Yeah, we're just starting up this program. So April 6th, the Saturday, April 6th, we have room for maybe 10 more people. And you can reach me at jbjrproductions@gmail.com if you want to book a reservation. This is going to be the first of its kind, so there's going to be some development going on. But I'm hoping that maybe we can actually show the film during the tour somehow on the bus. But we're still brainstorming and growing. But if you want to be a part of this initial voyage, we really appreciate it. Just reach out to me. And one more thing I wanted to highlight is just that the film actually touches on the history of Oregon, the dark history of Oregon, which a lot of people don't know about. And but I wanted to keep the film in the spirit of growth, progress, and development. So it starts out kind of deep, and people learn a lot about the wine industry and about Oregon, but it ends on a really light note of how we should all come together and just make it possible for everyone to be able to prosper and grow.
Well, the film is Red, White, and Black. It's a documentary about minorities in the wine industry in the Northwest. And Jerry Bell Jr., thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay. I wanted to touch on one more thing, too. I'm actually finishing up a movie with my film partner, Drew Holly. It's called The Buffalo Soldiers of the Pacific Northwest. And it's about the Buffalo Soldiers after the actual Civil War, what happened to Black soldiers. And a lot of them came out west to help lay down and settle the foundation in the West, which doesn't get a whole lot of acknowledgement. So Drew Holly reached out to me. It's a very important film to show how the West was actually, you know, migrated and helped settlers come out this way. And I'd like people to kind of reach out. It's going to be on Facebook. You can go to Buffalo Soldiers of the Pacific Northwest to find out more about it.
Wow. Well, come back and see us when that film is in the can.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm S.W. Konser. And now we are joined in the studio by Nora Coley. She's a filmmaker and the managing director of the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival.
Hello. Hello.
Nora, thanks for joining us. And we have with you a couple. We have many filmmakers who are part of PAL Film Festival. And two of them are with us today. Martin Lucas is the director of Hote Flash. It's a black and white infrared video about the... Okay, hang on a second.
We're changing mics.
Thanks, folks, for staying with us. We have Martin Lucas. She is the director of Hote Flash, a black and white infrared video about the hormonal transition of menopause. It's shot with, of all things, a thermal hunting rifle scope. Martin, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Aubrey Peoples is the director of Decadeless. It's a comedy that follows four teens having an experimental evening. That's fascinating. So I'm wanting to hear more about that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start up. Marn, you are a doula, an end-of-life doula. Tell us about that.
I'm a longtime artist and filmmaker, and I had an art project that I've been working on for the last 5 years called Bardo Project. And that's where I've been collaborating with artists with terminal illnesses from the time of their diagnosis until their passing. So I do legacy work with them and try to determine what their legacy is and do an art project with them. I had three major collaborators that I followed. And then I had a big art show in New York City in October. And through this process of working with artists with terminal illnesses, I realized that I am good at this work, you know, at being present for folks who are, you know, facing their death. So I decided to train through INELDA to become an end-of-life doula. So I'm finishing up my training, but I have been doing this work for the last 5 years.
And the Bardo is sort of a transitional space, mm-hmm. an in-between space. I think people are familiar. That award-winning book that came out last year, Lincoln and the Bardo, has been on people's minds a lot.
Yes, Bardo is the transitional space between death and rebirth. But I'm using that term loosely to describe that space where people are sort of caught between, they're not living their best life. They're in this terminal illness stage. They're not dead. They're in this in-between state. So I'm using that Buddhist term very loosely, but it really is the only word I can come up with, you know, that fits that phase.
So for this latest film, you've used some really unusual equipment. It's not every day that you see a thermal hunting rifle scope used to make a short film.
Yes, well, I have quite a bit of history with using black and white infrared video. Starting in 1995, I made a patient-surgeon scenario film with a collaborator, Jakob Pander, and that was in 1995. Then another project in 2013 where we used Butoh dancers and contemporary dancers, and we filmed a live hospital birth in infrared. And now this new film is about the hormonal transition of menopause. And what this footage looks like is it's black and white, but anything that is cool or wet is dark, and anything that's hot is white. So the bodies sort of look like they're glowing from within, And I like the idea, like Carl Sagan talks about how we're made out of star stuff. This really seems to show the illumination of the energy of humanity. So it's, for me, it's very effective for telling these narratives. And now I'm using that technology for my own personal artwork about the end of life and death and transformation. So I'm using it a lot of the video stills now for large scale photography projects.
So how have you, the two sort of callings that you have, the vocations that you have, how do they dovetail? Have you used your art in some of your work as a end-of-life doula?
Yes. I mean, a lot of times when I'm collaborating with people, it helps that I'm an artist, so I have very, I think outside the box in pretty much every capacity in life. So, you know, if somebody is stuck in bed and they're, you know, not well, they think, well, what can I do? You know, I can't do anything. And there's always something you can work on with people. So it, for me, it dovetails perfectly. I'm able to come up with sort of out-of-the-box suggestions of ways that people can express themselves to give them a sense of peace and sort of ego integrity, like kind of figuring out what their legacy is, what they were good at in life. I'm able to help them find a way with creativity to sort of manifest that and put that, you know, together.
And is Hot Flash part of a program that's happening at PAL Film Fest? And are you going to be in attendance?
It is. It's part of the Experimental Shorts program on Saturday at 1 o'clock at the Hollywood Theater. And I will be in attendance.
All right. Well, we'll talk with you more in just a moment. I want to talk with Aubrey Peoples. This is a kind of a switch. We're going to a comedy called Decade List. Tell us about how this came about.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I don't know how I'm going to follow that. My film is far less important. I've been working as an actor in film and television for 15 years. So this is my debut as a director and a writer. And it's very low concept, very day in the life, which is stuff that I'm super interested in as a filmmaker. I feel like it really turns the focus to characters and dialogue. And also that's just what I have the resources to make right now. But it follows a couple of teenagers just sort of having an experimental evening. And it was sort of inspired by my fascination with teenagers and just young people in general. I'm very young. I'm only 25. But I feel like with how rapidly technology moves, it's almost like even with people just 3 years younger than me, I have a completely different language than them. And I feel like, you know, there was a time when 90s kids could relate to 80s kids, but now I almost can't relate to people just like 3 years younger than me and then them 3 years younger than themselves. And I'm so impressed with kids today in certain ways. Like they're so, and I'm speaking very broadly, but I find that there's a lot more confidence with like expressing who you are. And there's such a more vast knowledge of the world through the internet and being exposed to more things. But, you know, of course, kids are always still kids. And so I wanted to kind of make something like the films that I love about teenagers, like Ghost World, like classic kind of kitsch films like that, but with like kids today.
Yeah. Have you, so working as an actor, working on sets, working in production, you've obviously crossed paths with people of a lot of different ages, but especially, you know, TV and films like young people. So so how did you come about to casting your film? How did you come about finding the people? Were these people you had worked with before?
They're my friends. My roommate is one of my dearest friends. He's also been an actor since I've been acting as well. And then so that's Austin Abrams. He plays a teenager who thinks he's a DJ. And then one of my other good friends, Christina Scherrer, is the other female lead. And then our friend Cooper Koch is the fourth cast member. It's just four people.
And what I'm so intrigued. What does an experimental evening have? Is this a little bit free form, or is it building towards? I don't want to give away any spoilers.
Okay.
But tell us a little bit more about the film, Decade List.
Yeah, by experimental, I just mean kids sort of experimenting with things they've never experimented before in any kind of way, whether that's like drugs or, you know, relationships. And I don't want to give too much away. It probably sounds more exciting than it is. It's just really four teens kind of messing around, just like for one evening after school kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Sure. So is there part of a group of films, like a comedy block, or what's
yes.
your film part of?
Yeah, it's a part of the comedy series at the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Fest tonight, actually, and I will be there.
Okay, so it's tonight, Thursday evening,
yes.
And is that at the Hollywood?
Clinton.
The Clinton Street Theater. Yes. Okay. So Nora, I want to get back to Nora Coley, who is the managing director of the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Fest. So tell us more about some of the highlights of the festival.
Well, last night we had an amazing live score to a silent film, Salome, and it was beyond our expectation. Really great turnout and beautiful music.
And that was at the Holocene, right?
Yeah, okay. It was super. I was like, whoa, I didn't expect it to be this good, but it was really great. And then tonight we have the comedy shorts starting at 9 at the Clinton. And I think last year we had some shorts that felt pretty dark, so it was nice to get a lot of funny films this year. And happy to have Aubrey in it because I really loved her film, Decadeless, so people should come see that. And before the shorts program, we have the, what is it called? Handel's Variation, which is a feature documentary about a classical violinist. And it's not for... It's for more than classical lovers because I like classical music, but it's not something that I go looking for. But it's the story really about the violinist herself and living in Florida now in her 80s and her life now. And then I'm really excited for System of Supremacy, which is tomorrow evening also at the Clinton. I can't remember what day today is. It's Thursday. And that's at 9:10, and that's... talking about colonialism and, the power structure we are in today and how hopefully with the political climate we will overcome that at some point. And then thank you for handing me my schedule. Another highlight is Losing Ground, which is on Saturday night at the Hollywood.
This is a bit of a revival.
Yes, this is a revival. It was a film made in 1982, but it's considered one of the first narrative features done by an African-American woman. And she died at 46, Kathleen Collins. And so we're flying her daughter out, who's a writer herself. Kathleen was also a writer. We're flying her daughter out to do a Q&A with us. But so we wanted, every year we usually do, we bring a pioneering director, a woman director. And this year we decided to highlight someone that didn't get the recognition that they should have, but she's gotten it since her daughter decided to bring the film out again, and it's gotten rave reviews, and film historians are like, why didn't we pay attention to this before? So that's our plan this year to have that, so that's a big highlight for us.
Yeah, it's sad when somebody doesn't get a chance to get that recognition. You've had, obviously, heavy hitters like Penelope Spheeris out here. We've had her on the show, and it's great to, finally see her get the recognition that she deserves. But this is, how many years is this?
We're in our 12th year.
12th year now.
Yeah.
And so just, you're all over town now. You're in many different venues, and you're... Getting obviously you're getting filmmakers from all over the country, in some cases from overseas.
Yeah.
So the outreach has really been effective.
Right, it has. And 12 years, a lot of people still don't know about us, so we've been pushing really hard and to get more recognition, and I feel like people are starting to hear it more finally. I also know that a lot of times people think a film festival of films made by women and non-binary directors means that, I'll tell my wife. And I'm like, no, you can be there too. Mm-hmm. This isn't just for women to come. This isn't romance films either. Like, that's what people are expecting. Oh, it's a bunch of Thelma and Louise or romance stories. But it's beyond that. And these are really good films. And we cannot progress as a being equal if our allies aren't standing there with us and also showing up. So... we want people to think this is a very serious film festival, just like they think PIFF is or whatever, which is funny because I was at PIFF handing out flyers, and I noticed the people that would look and I'd say, oh, this is a film festival of women directors, and they'd be like, oh, and you could tell they were totally not interested as soon as I said that. And a lot of them were women, I'd say 60 and above, which made me feel really bad about how we are still thinking about ourselves too,
Well, and another challenge, and this is also PIFF, the Portland International Film Festival, is so many people who want to do Netflix and chill. It's really important in my mind, at least, for people to come out, get in an audience together, you know, maybe have those post film discussions rather than just stay at home and stream a film.
Absolutely. And these are films you're not always going to get to see on those platforms, especially the shorts films. Short films can be incredibly powerful. In even 2 minutes, they can say so much. And those platforms aren't there to show a short film. So you get to see a really nice art form in the shorts program, too. So that's always important.
Well, in the few minutes we have left, I want to ask about next projects that are coming up. Let's start with Aubrey Peoples. What do you have on tap for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just had a film come out. It's on iTunes and Amazon, as well as a bunch of other streaming platforms. Speaking of streaming, it's called Locating Silver Lake with Josh Peck and Finn Wittrock, and you can get that right now. And then, yeah, this has been my main focus, the short film Decade List, as of right now. It might be being released on Vimeo soon, so we'll see. But yeah.
And Martin Lucas, tell us about what's in the future for you.
Well, presently, one thing I wanted to mention is that my film Hot Flash is dedicated to Portland, the late Portland, Oregon artist Merrill Callen. Mm. And she was a artist working with papermaking, and she studied printmaking at the University of Oregon. And she is a very under-recognized artist because her ex-husband, the father of her two sons, Jakob and Arnold, they're all famous artists here. And, you know, she was an artist herself and was sort of my art mom and, you know, a feminist and a lover of arts and ideas. So my film is dedicated to her, Merrill Callen, and on the future horizon, I'll be participating in a conference in Lisbon, Portugal in May, and it's called Femme Meeting, and it's Women in Art, Science, and Technology. So I will be giving a presentation about using infrared video as an art form over the past 25 years.
All right. And Nora, the way that listeners can find out more about the PAL Film Fest?
Yes, they can go to www.palfilmfest.com, and we also have Facebook pages. You can buy tickets for the shows at the Hollywood. The experimental shorts that Marn is in is at the Hollywood, as we said, and so you have to go on their website to get those tickets or show up at the box office. And everything else is at the Clinton moving forward besides Saturday.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm S.W. Conser. Thanks to all of our guests today, Nora Coley, Marn Lucas, Aubrey Peoples, and Jerry Bell Jr. Thank you all so much.
Woo-woo, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And you can keep up with us on Twitter at kboowordsandpicture.